Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
But that's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Very nice, Mr. Crisbola.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to this unexpected episode of the Place to Be podcast. I thought that was a fitting song, considering that's where I'm at in my life right now. Don't you want me, baby? Let's go. Arrive, please. I do have one baby with me here tonight, though, and that is, of course, my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
Papa, how are you?
I'm good. Not Papa yet.
Not yet.
I guess there. Technically.
Spiritually, you're there. And as we quote the great book that I know your wife's reading and all of our good friends that are moms are reading, What to Expect When You're Expecting. Expecting the unexpected. And that's why we're talking this evening. Because as we usually record on Friday nights, we thought that the little bundle of joy would already be here in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like Emmett Smith starting the 93 season. Contract dispute.
Yes. Stubborn.
With the good Lord.
Late like her mother. Never on time and ready.
So, but the good news is she gets to stay in her warm little for another evening, and you and I get to wish we were hiding somewhere warm yes. Instead of talking about what we're going to talk about tonight.
We get to venture to the Great White North.
Exactly. And the Great White North is where we will be this evening. It is, of course, Friday night, which means it is time for V Squared, the Vintage Vault. Let me get the door open. Let me see. Okay. You in here?
No.
Yeah. Nope, looks like he's out right now. Okay, principal building's not in the house right now. All right, tonight on the Place to Be podcast, the Vintage Vault brings you, well, it is going to be the beginning of the world for your daughter, but the end of the world for the rest of us after this.
I guess we'll hold it there.
Yes. We don't want them to get too far ahead of the game. Tonight, on the Vintage Vault, we give you In Your House, number 4. And what would the surname end up being in the end? Do you remember? The
Great White North.
That's what it was, Great White North. But it would be the Melted White North after the what we're going to have to deal with here. The date, October 22nd, 1995, live from where, as VKM mentioned, the Winnipeg Arena in Winnipeg, Manitoba, home of the Jets.
Yes. Home were of they future. Still there? They were still there at this point, right?
Yes. No, they didn't leave. I don't think they left for Phoenix till like 98, I think, or 97. This might be the last year, actually. Maybe it was 96. This might be the last year, maybe second to last year that they were in Winnipeg. And, of course, they are now back.
Mm-hmm.
Your announcers, as Vincent just mentioned, VKM, the King, and JR, we will have a different third commentator later on in the show. Your attendance, not a bad one, actually. More than I remember it being, 10,339. It's a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people, more than I thought for this show. Mm. I don't remember having that many people. Buy rate, 0.4. figures.
And I definitely remember I ordered this one live. I know that.
You did? Okay.
Yes.
I rented this one a couple months later. Why don't you – we had a bevy of dark matches. Mm-hmm. And why don't you let everyone know what they were?
Okay. We had the first dark match featured one of my all-time favorites, of course, Bob Sparkplug Holly, defeating a newcomer, Rad Radford. We'll get into him in our next Vintage Vault. Next up was a continuing saga of Henry Godwin and Sid, as Godwin got his revenge from In Your House 3, picked up the win there. Bret Hart continued his saga in his continuing appearances on these dark matches and Coliseum exclusives, defeated Isaac Yankum. And Owen Hart and Yokozuna faced off with Savio Vega and Bam Bam Bigelow. Very interesting match there.
Mm. Yeah, how about
course,
that for a weird
that
team,
was not a title match, which we'll get to shortly as well.
Mm. Kind of a weird team, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Where did that came from? Very strange. All right. Well, why don't we just get right down to it and not avoid it? Because it's not going to be overly pretty. Our opener pits a newcomer. I'll tell you who that newcomer is in a moment. Against...
I might have to do a remix of the song on our little editing machine here.
Yes. You know, in my head, it doesn't sound as bad with the character he has now, but like in about 5 years, I don't know.
We may have to mix it up with him. Maybe every time he changes characters, we'll switch a song up.
Because about 5 years from now, I don't know if the two go hand in hand, but that's all right. Of course, we're talking about the great, awesome 1995 mid-carder, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, who was shamelessly left off the last show.
I saw a Hunter Hearst Helmsley figure today in the Toy Vault store at Warwick Mall.
Ah.
The old school with the riding crop and the IC title.
Ah, very nice. Very nice.
They have some good old school ones there. They had Akeem, which I sent you the picture of. They had Dusty Rhodes, Bam Bam Bigelow, the Horseman. And then they have all the Hasbro ones that I have. Mm-hmm. And I realize how much money I'm probably sitting on when I see the price tags on them. But that place is pretty sweet. If you're ever in the Warwick, Rhode Island area and you go to the Warwick Mall, check out the Toy Vault. They have wrestling memorabilia and figures out the ying yang.
Yes, yes. I have been there a few times with you. And there's a bevy of good stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Horseman one?
Yes.
Really? Four pack?
I'm sorry, not Horseman. Brainbusters.
Brainbusters. Oh, okay. I have them. No, I don't have the Brainbusters. I have regular Arn and Tully on my wall. Okay. So anyway, the Blue Blood from Greenwich, Connecticut, the great Hunter Hearst Helmsley, takes on a newcomer. Well, not really a newcomer, kind of a refreshed character.
Mm.
One half of the former World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. We all remember the Head Shrinkers, a.k.a. the Samoan SWAT Team. Well, one of them broke off and kind of had a new character. Why don't you let everyone know who that new character was?
That new character was Fatu, a guy who'd be making a difference. Head Shrinkers were phased out in July of this year, and he just kind of disappeared for a little bit before being repackaged. He returned as a singles guy, dropped a savage gimmick, and revealed that he can now speak English and had been raised in the United States and became a man of the streets. Talked about growing up in the hood and being shot during a real-life drive-by, and he was referred to now as Making a Difference Fatu. He wore a pretty gaudy... Maybe we should be playing New Edition for him because that's the kind of jacket he had on. This leather coat with all these bright... Actually, maybe this is more like... not Jamaican, but like you know, that kind of music. All right.
Yes.
try not to be too racist.
I can't think of the word.
Yes.
No, I can't think of the word.
Reggae. Oh, reggae.
Reggae. Yeah, reggae music, yeah.
All right, so after a short while, two men started showing up wherever Fatu was in the ring. It was actually portrayed by Samu and his brother Lloyd Inouye. Who would be known as the Samoan Gangsta Party. They were actually going to do this whole angle where they were trying to corrupt Fatu and they were like from his past and trying to get him back into the drug game and all this stuff, but it never went anywhere. So this is Fatu's... actually, no, we will see him again. So, but this is his debut in this gimmick.
Indeed. And I think the thing I most remember from this gimmick was truly that absolutely hideous-looking jacket, which I'm surprised that... Doc Hendricks or that other guy didn't come out and shill for, you know, yes. $350 back then.
You see leather jackets in the mall, they have nothing on them. They cost like $200. This one with Fatu in multiple colors written all over it is only $350. Barry Nadinsky.
Oh, terrible. terrible. So they hook up here in the opener.
Yeah, I don't think there's much behind this match. I'm pretty sure it was just thrown together.
Yeah. I think it's just a straight-up opener, get the crowd going. Not a bad match. You know, Hunter was in a good groove. I don't have the stomach. I don't have the heart yet to tell the silverback that I think more of Triple of Hunter or something. That I think.
Yeah, let's not discuss that.
Let's not go there. Yeah, I mean it's a pretty standard match. They both they work pretty well together. Fatu was always a pretty good worker, even for a guy his size. The gimmick was just a little weird, but again, we have to take into account. And you made a good point in our last vault that we are getting close to where the mid card and the gimmicks start to kind of flesh out a little bit. But we still got some. There's still somebody in the office that's coming up with absolutely ridiculous ideas. Hopefully that guy gets fired soon, whoever it is. But, you know, that aside, I think it's a pretty solid first match.
And I guess maybe we can just take a quick minute to talk about behind the scenes since you brought it up. It was actually during this time that Bill Watts was booking. I don't know if you remember that. He was brought in here in late 95 and took over. He doesn't last very long, but the angles kind of picked up a little bit of steam, and the in-ring got a little bit stiffer and a little bit more realistic for a few months here, and you could tell Watts' influence. But I think he got fed up with some of the backstage politics and kind of got forced out of there pretty quickly.
Well, for those that, you know, just to kind of turn back the clock a bit, Bill Watts would be, I believe it was 93, 94, into early 95. He was the head of creative, I guess, in essence, for WCW right before Nitro got started, and people hated it. Everybody thought it was going to be cool because they kept not getting – they went through a stretch. It's all in the whole – I'm trying to paraphrase it. It's all in the rise and fall of the WCW DVD, which you should definitely get. And they were saying how they wanted to have a guy who knew wrestling. They kept bringing in, you know, the guy that Flair hates. What's his name? Jim Herd.
Yeah.
And some other
– hump.
Yeah, and all these other humps that were all bean counters. And Michael Hayes says on the DVD he was excited that they were going to bring in Bill Watts. And then immediately they all learned to regret it. He was way too old school.
Yeah.
He'd fine guys for not wearing ties or not showing up. And
yeah, and then he made them stick to kayfabe outside the ring, outside the arena. And he took the mats off the floors and guys were getting hurt. He banned the top rope move. Yeah, he had all kind of wacky shit going on. And then, of course, infamously, he pissed off his balcony of his office at the CNN tower. And that was it. Yeah, I think it was that combined. Didn't he make a racial thing that was kind of taken the wrong way, but Hank Aaron got all pissed and so they fired him. So.
Yes. Yeah, they cut him loose. Yeah,
so he shows up here for 3 months, and according to him, he was never supposed to stick around longer than that. It was supposed to just be a three-month stint.
Yeah.
And then he's gone. So not Jim Watts, as you like to call him, but Bill Watts.
I know, Jim Watts. Yeah, Cowboy Jim. But, you know, obviously his really only real, I guess, value to anybody now is somehow prying the Mid-South tapes from his wife's hands.
Yes.
For a few months, yeah, the product did seem to get a little stiffer, and there was some more, I'd like to think, and I don't know what you think about this, JR, but I'd like to think that the backstage might have kind of embraced that a little bit, because you would think that, you know, after, I mean, this year has been just, except for a few bright spots, really an unmitigated disaster,
right?
And you would think that maybe having a little more realism in the ring might have helped the morale a little bit, you know? What do you think?
I agree, yeah, I think so, and you could see a little bit of the phasing out. I mean, there's still some here in our next couple shows, a little bit of the gimmicks, but they're being phased out slowly. And as 96 rolls around, that's when we start to see more of the gimmick wrestlers start to be used as jobber to the stars, which a concept I really like as we get into 96, we'll get to the way they started bringing in some veteran guys from the indie circuit and use them as enhancement talent, which I thought was a great idea. And, and you'll see the legitimate guys they're bringing in to be pushed will not have these kind of gimmicks. So I think it did start here with Watts. And you see a little bit more aggression in the matches, a little bit more stiffness, and just the feud seem a little more heated than they did throughout the year. So as much as this show is a bottoming out, which we'll get to later, it's also a big turnaround point as well. And next month is where we really see that the doors and the windows all, you know, busted open and letting the fresh air in. But it's this show really where you can kind of start to see things changing.
Yes, yes. In any event, I wasn't sure who would win this match because both guys are kind of just starting, but they had Helmsley win clean with a pedigree. So
well,
obviously,
especially coming off, I remember being surprised coming off of In Your House 3 live at the time because we had just seen Waylon Mercy job to Savio Vega, so I was kind of expecting the same thing here.
Right. Very weird. And in the end, Helmsley gets the win with the pedigree. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe they thought the Fatu thing was a joke. I don't know. I would have thought it was a joke considering how hideously ugly that jacket was.
I think they had more planned for Helmsley than they did for Fatu.
Yeah, I think so too. So Helmsley wins the opener.
Of course, Fatu did get to work in his usual 360 clothesline cell. I know that.
Yes. No one's better than him at that, no matter how big he ever was. So, okay. Next up, we have our first title match of the evening. The World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships are on the line. Your champions, the Smoking Guns, are now your champions. And I mentioned, a couple months ago that, where have these guys been? All of a sudden, they are the champions. Mm-hmm. They did defeat. Do we have it down when they defeated
them? It was the night after In Your House 3. The Gorilla Monsoon came out and actually gave the titles back to Owen Hart and Yokozuna. Because if you remember when we last left you, Diesel and Shawn Michaels had usurped the titles at In Your House 3. So he didn't like the chicanery that went down with Owen Hart and all that crap that we talked about. So he comes out the next night on Raw, gives the titles back to Owen and Yoko, strips them from Shawn and Diesel, but then makes Owen and Yoko, he forces them into a match with the Smoking Guns, the rematch back from In Your House 1, and the Guns won their titles back. So
yes,
it was a big win for them, and they're back on top of the division.
Yes, and their opponents, a couple of guys, so it's pretty much an all babyface match here, kind of rare. And if at least for this time, and you have the bad guy Reza Ramon, and his partner, his buddy, the 1-2-3 Kid, and whose relationship a little strained over the last couple of months. You had highlighted some of the points of that feud on our last vault. He was trying to make a statement, and he cost him a match against who did he cost a match against Razor against? Was it
Dean Douglas?
Dean Douglas, and then they got into a shoving match, but maybe they apparently made amends here. So here they are going after.
Yes, and Kid was really into this. He really wanted to win the gold, win the tag titles, and he was hoping Razor would really put aside any other aspirations so they could work as a team and a unit here to win his first. Because he had won a title before, and of course it was only for that one day with Holly or whatever it was, a week. With Jannetty, and then the one day with Holly. So he was really looking for a legitimate title reign and was hoping his big buddy Razor was going to help him out.
Right. And
you, Chico, Razor Ramon.
We'll hear more about that in about a week. So the match is, again, not bad. Middle of the road. Razor probably was in his best groove in the ring at this point.
Mm.
And obviously, Kid was looking pretty good. And the Guns were – I mean, everybody had their boots on and put on a pretty good match. And the Guns sneak out the victory and retain their championships when Billy, the blonder one, rolls Kid up for the win. And I don't remember. Was there any weird chicanery here? How did the end of that – I don't remember being a completely – it wasn't like a – easy roll up or anything, so or just a out of nowhere.
Yeah, they Razor had I think Billy or Bart, one of them defeated, and Kid did the old begged in from the apron, wanting to be tagged, and Razor capitulated, tagged him in, and then Kid kind of laid across Billy, and Billy rolled him up and pinned him. So this starts the whole thing with Kid was really starting to throw some temper tantrums and was bitching and crying after the match, and he again was yelling at Razor, saying, kind of blaming him, and he starts bitching and moaning in the ring. So there was a little bit of not really chicane or anything weird going on, but he forced himself into the ring and then got pinned.
Right. So the Smoking Guns retain their World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships. And as we would see later on in the evening, Razor was not – his evening was not done yet.
No.
And I'm sure – and that, of course, added to the tension between these two, so –
yeah, so two matches in, we're off to a decent start. Opener, good, put over the heel, 8 minutes, got the point across. This match, four pretty good workers. The Guns at this point, I thought they were really starting to gel as a team, and over the next year, I think they will be the dominant team in the promotion, in ring and in kayfabe-wise on top, but also in the ring. I thought they were really starting to work well together. I thought they were always solid in 93 and 94, but here it seems like they're really starting to gain some confidence and some conviction in their tag teams and double teams and all that kind of stuff. So I like this match. I remember thinking it was solid, and I like the storyline advancement as well, and we'll see there's a lot more to that story to come.
Indeed. And the Smoking Guns retain their championships in a pretty pretty solid match. And the tension continues.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, our first really big time debut in a while. And
it's a return as well.
Yes, a return of someone, and not exactly a, shall we say, normal character.
Said he was bizarre, and finally, ladies and gentlemen, we are moments away from seeing the bizarre Goldust in action. And without further ado, his opponent, from Hollywood, California, weighing 260 pounds, Goldust.
That was always funny. I was before we talk about the character, I gotta let you know about the first time I ever actually saw this character. It was in the fall, around this time of the year, obviously, duh. And our friend Dr. G and I were on the road doing a football game for our alma mater, University of New Haven. We were in the hotel, kind of preparing ourselves. It was Friday night, and we were getting our stats and stuff ready for the game the next day, and I forgot what we had on. I don't know what channel it was, but I think Superstars came on. Might have been like the WB or whatever the channel was at the time. Oh, that's kind of cool. Him and I hadn't really been watching much WWF over the year. It was mostly WCW and other stuff. And we watched a couple matches, and then the vignette where he's standing out in the hills of Hollywood in front of the Hollywood sign. And and we watch it, and he looks at me and goes, "What the fuck was that?" I said, "I don't know, but I don't know if Dad's approving of it." And sure enough, this was what the natural would turn into. Why don't you give us the background of the bizarre one?
Yes, quite the change from the last time we've seen this man, of course.
That's for sure.
Goldust portrayed by Dustin Runnels, otherwise known as Dustin Rhodes. Last time we saw him in WWF was at Royal Rumble 1991, when him and his father, Dusty, were run out of the promotion by Ted DiBiase and Virgil. Since then, he spent a lot of time in WCW. He was just himself as the natural. Had a really good feud with Larry Zbyszko for a while. Feuded with, of course, the Dangerous Alliance. Had a tag team title reign with Barry Windham. Had a really good feud in 1993 with Rick Rude.
Yes.
Had a good feud with Stunning Steve Austin. 1994 started a feud with Bunkhouse Buck and Colonel Rob Parker. He forged a tag team with Arn Anderson, of course, and Arn Anderson turned on him, and that led to him bringing his dad back in. Dusty stepped back in the ring, and they had a Halloween Havoc Fall Brawl War Games match. Mm-hmm. In late 94, we found out a new opponent for Rhodes, and that was the Blacktop Bully, and they had a feud heading into 1995. And at the first ever uncensored pay-per-view, both men bladed during a King of the Road match, and they had both been instructed not to because it was against a corporate policy at that time by Turner. So they were both fired as a result. So, of course, Vince McMahon never wanted to not take a chance to land a punch on WCW, re-signed Mr. Rhodes, brought him back in, and said, we have a unique gimmick for you. And it was around this time as well that Dustin and Dusty were starting to get on shaky terms. Dustin had married a former makeup artist and what many would call a ring rat, Terry Runnels, and Dusty was not very happy with that, and him and Dustin had a lot of issues, a lot of falling out. It's in both of their books that talk about it. And he wanted to do something that was completely radically different. He wanted to step out of his dad's shadow. Wanted something new, something fresh, and so something where he could be his own man. So, of course, Vince McMahon's the guy to go to when you're looking for something like that. So they came up with this concept, this guy Goldust. He'd be, I don't want to say androgynous, but very very mysterious as far as...
effeminate.
Yeah, effeminate, but not always. So this unit weren't never really sure about his orientation. His first vignette actually aired on July 24th, Raw. And over the next 2 months, or 3 months really, we saw vignettes every week. The first couple were just his name written in gold dust or a gold pen across the screen. We didn't actually see him. Then we'd hear him. And then I remember the first time you saw him was that one you mentioned in front of the Hollywood Hills where he turns around. He's got the big gold hat on, the top hat. And that was the first time you actually saw him. And when you realized who it was Dustin Rhodes. I remember at the time there were a lot of rumors that he was coming back. We just didn't know as what or as who, like on the news line that I call. I think I've talked about that before, Journal Line or whatever. So so he came back as Goldust. The vignettes aired for months. His first actual match was on August 29th, a dark match in Erie, Pennsylvania, fought Razor Ramon, and then fought Bob Holly in a dark match in Your House 3. This is his first actual televised match. And I remember a lot of people at the time wondering, was he going to wrestle with the wig on? Was that his hair? Because, I mean, he had just wrestled in March at WCW, so it's very unlikely that he had grown this mane of hair. And, of course, it was revealed to be a wig, and once the house show report started leaking out, it was... we found out that he was not going to wrestle in the wig, that he was going to take it off when he got in the ring. So face is covered in gold paint, long platinum wig that he takes off during his matches. His ears were actually painted black at this show, which was kind of weird. And he wore a golden bodysuit as well, a full-on bodysuit. So a very unique character. And as we'll see over the next couple of months is when he really, really pushes the envelope as we go into December. Here he's just kind of weird and quoting movies and just kind of an odd dude. So a lot of people in awe as he makes his entrance, but very, very new, very different character. I remember being pretty excited at the time.
Yeah, I have to say that, well, first of all, watching with Dr. G, who hated it because he was a big Dusty guy, so he thought that this was really screwed up. But at the time, it was necessary for, because I think Dustin needed a change of pace. I don't think he could be the natural for the rest of his career. This was a smart business move for him.
Well, the weird thing is, though, he could have worked as the natural if he waited like three or four more months and came in that early 96 stretch. I actually think he could have fit in as the natural at that point. I think it's a good thing he didn't. I mean, obviously, he's more well-known for this character than anything else he ever did. But I'm just saying, I think maybe he could have survived. He probably would have lasted as long as he did as Goldust, but I think he could have had a run as the natural again.
Perhaps. And later on in that year and into 97, he almost becomes the natural anyway in kind of a roundabout way. The character goes through so many different changes over the next year. But right now, yeah, he's not quite as creepy yet. He's just weird. He gets the real – you're right. He really turns up the charm, if you will. If you will, over the next couple of months. His opponent, by the way, is another guy that's returning. Not as much fanfare, but another guy that's returning.
Yes, overlooked.
Yes, is a former rocker, Marty Jannetty, who we haven't seen since early 94. He would – I don't know where he went. Did he go to WCW? I don't think so.
No, I think he was probably in rehab.
He probably was in rehab, most likely. Came back –
Actually, he did some ECW appearances in 95.
Oh, okay. I don't remember him in ECW. It's weird. There are a lot of guys – you know, there are a lot of guys that went into ECW that – I don't remember in that stretch that that Paul would give a powder to for a week. In fact, at one point, I think it was in 95, you know who did make an appearance? I read this the other day, and just in a quick side note, you know who made an appearance in WCW and ECW for like 2 weeks? Demolition.
Really?
Yeah.
Now that I never knew.
Yeah, very weird. Paul would bring in anybody for 2 weeks, then he realizes the checks would bounce, and then they left. But all right, anyway. So Jannetty came back, and he would be the shall we say, collateral damage.
Yeah, so actually a little note about Jannetty. He left shortly after WrestleMania 10, and apparently, I never realized this, it was around that time that the Charles Austin case was heard. Of course, that is the wrestler he paralyzed back in, was like 91 or 90?
Oh, right.
So right. It was never really denied or confirmed, but it looks like it may have been due to that he disappeared. So
very interesting. Very interesting. And the match here is pretty straightforward. Nothing really earth-shattering.
Right, yeah. He returned in September, just basically had a basic face run leading to this. And they used him here to put over Goldust. And, you know, they wanted to pick someone that would have a good match with him. And the match is fine. He does his usual great selling. And he's another guy. I think he busts out the 360 sell for Goldust here. And I remember Goldust on the house show circuit leading up to this. It was rumored that he was going to use, I think it was a heart punch. It was something lame. But then he comes in here and uses the move he'd become known for, the curtain call, which was like an inverted suplex slam, I guess.
Yeah, not sure what it was, but it was effective. Better than a heart punch. Good God.
Yeah,
want to use
I remember being
that.
pretty
yeah.
worried when they said
seriously,
that.
Seriously? I don't understand how this match needed to be 11 minutes, but it got its point across.
I remember it being a little bland. I do remember that at the time being like, all right, this is what I've been waiting for. I mean, and we both mentioned that he was really still in that Dustin Rhodes kind of gimmick. He wasn't really fully on yet.
Right.
As far as the mannerisms or anything else that he would eventually use. Here, he's still wrestling very much like the natural.
Yes. And the match itself, again, nothing to write home about, but obviously the new bombastic and very effervescent character. Actually, you know, you said androgynous, but it kind of was. Mm. I would actually use that. I would actually use that adjective. He was quite androgynous because when I think of an androgynous media character, I think of David Bowie when he was Ziggy Stardust and Aladdin Sane. And it was almost not as ridiculously over the top as Goldust was, but
right,
because
I mean you said effeminate, and he acted effeminate, but he didn't dress, I mean, he wasn't like Adrian Adonis, you know what I mean, something like
No.
When you think of effeminate wrestlers, you kind of think of that.
Right.
And he definitely didn't have that going for him.
No. So I would actually use the term
androgynous. He's just kind of creepy and weird more than anything.
Yeah, and then he really amps up the creepiness in a couple months. But here he just comes out, gets his point across, gets the win over Marty Jannetty, and the following month he would actually get a more credible opponent. I just realized as I was looking at the rest in peace list. By the way, follow along on our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. Follow along. We have the rest in peace list. We always put the list of superstars who've passed away, and we put down what their last show was. I just realized we have a pretty depressing show coming up next week.
Yes.
Or whatever
yes.
we go again. It's like the good Lord. So there's Goldust's big debut. I'm complimenting you. I don't know what you were drinking that day when you came up with this gimmick, but you should be proud of yourself. You weren't doing much of anything else of worth in this calendar year. Goldust gets the win. Next up.
I mean, fine debut. It's okay. The point was they got the character across, but other than that, not. It wasn't impressive. I'll say that in the ring.
Yeah. There's really not much more to say. So, next up, we have what my brother affectionately calls the put down the fork match. In fact, if I call him right now, he'll tell me, oh, you're doing the put down the fork match? And that is former main event, actually a pair of former main eventers. Kind of sad if you think about it.
Now,
King Candy Pants running out of time.
That's right. And the other thing is, could you imagine if there was a Fatu jacket as big as that he could wear? Yes. It looked like one of those little parachutes that little kids run under at recess. Those big things you lift up and down. Of course, we're talking about
this King... fat black guy. Get him with that fat jap and get him in the ring. Let's see if that big rice-eating son of a bitch can take out this black rapper.
What are you doing, Cowboy Jim Watts?
Yes. Cowboy Jim Watts, go take a piss off the balcony. Get these two fat pigs in the ring.
Oh, God. Could you imagine those booking meetings? Good Lord. Tobacco's chaw everywhere.
Fucking Jap.
And he wasn't even Japanese.
I know.
Not that he ridiculous. Knew that. He's an idiot. Ridiculous. But, okay. Mabel. King Diabetes, as Graham Cawthon would call him. Yes. Your former main eventer, number one contender, taking on former World Wrestling Federation champion, one half former World Wrestling Federation tag team champion, Yokozuna.
Now, this match wasn't supposed to happen. It was actually supposed to be Mabel and Undertaker in a King of the Ring rematch. However, on October 9th, we had a mammoth main event on Raw. The British Bulldog, Owen Hart, and Yokozuna versus Diesel, Shawn Michaels, and The Undertaker. That's a loaded match for Raw this time.
Yeah,
after the match was possibly one of the most forgotten, tremendous heel beatdowns of all time, as Camp Cornette, Davey Boy Smith, Owen Hart, Yokozuna, and Dean Douglas, and King Mabel came out as well. And they all just beat the shit out of Diesel, Michaels, and Taker. A brutal, brutal assault. And Taker suffered a leg drop by Yoko, splash, or leg drop by Mabel, and he ended up sustaining a broken eye socket, legit broken eye socket. So it took him out of action for 2 months, knocked him out of this match, and Gorilla Monsoon forces Yoko into his spot, and that's why we have this match here. Now, there's also some heat stemming back to Raw in September. I think we mentioned this in your house, through, and Yoko and Owen defended against Men on a Mission in back-to-back weeks. Kind of a cool little mini-feud, but... So that's where this all comes about. So Taker on the sidelines until Survivor Series now. Broken orbital socket. But I recommend checking that match out from Raw if you haven't seen it yet. 10-9. Bulldog, Owen, Yoko, Diesel, Shawn, Taker. It was a solid match. But the post-match beatdown was just some great heel work. And that had Jim Watts written all over it.
Question is, you know, knock on wood, I have never broken a bone in my life. Mm. But if there's any bone that I wouldn't want to break, it'd be my... orbital bone.
Yes. Yeah. It sounds painful, and it was legitimate. He did bust it up. So.
Yeah. Now, the match is pretty much what you would expect.
I'm gonna admit to this right now. At the time, I was looking forward to this match. I thought it was a cool concept. I mean, these two, but you never saw a match like this.
Just two.
Two just monster heels going at it. It was a cool idea and a cool concept.
Think Yoko could pull off the Fatu jacket?
No. But yeah, I'll admit it. I don't care. At the time, I remember actually liking this match. Well, I didn't like the match. I liked the build up and the idea of the match. Once the match happened, I realized it was grossly wrong.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's what you'd expect. I mean, it's just 5 minutes. They slap each other around, and then they end up fighting on the floor and both getting countered out, and then they hug after the match, which is kind of weird. But
yeah,
it's just kind of goofy. I missed the vicious Yokozuna. We're missing him. And Mabel was just on his last legs as any kind of legit threat. But you know, he's a guy that maybe would have benefited from more of a upper mid-card run before getting his little push. I think it was just too quick. For Mabel, and now he's like shunted back with a thud back to the mid card here. So, but to me, the highlight of this whole thing was that heel beat down on Raw.
On a side note, it seems very clear to me that Camp Cornette is clearly usurping the corporation.
Oh yeah,
as the badass heel faction of the company.
Yeah. Yeah, and it'll get even better. The real Camp Cornette doesn't start for another couple months, but this is like the burgeoning Camp Cornette. And I agree, they were clearly being positioned as the top heel dogs in the promotion at this point. And DiBiase, I mean, his corporation's really quickly falling apart, and Sid was his main guy, and we'll see next month that he picks up another guy, but he really didn't have much else going on at this point. So, and Sid is out of the picture mainly, so as far as anything legitimate.
So there you go. as my brother affectionately calls it, the put down the fork match. King, you know, I have to ask, speaking of offensive things, we have to see if Graham could find him another nickname. I don't want to offend anybody who has diabetes. So
yes. Okay, we don't want to piss off Wilford Brimley.
Yeah, exactly. And all that expensive, Liberty, insurance, yes. Needles or whatever. All right. We're going to take a break now because we usually don't do it this early, but,
we've got two matches left.
Yeah, but well, that's true.
Short
but
card.
These next two have a lot of meat and potatoes in it. So,
well, this match had a lot of meat, meat and potatoes,
a lot of other things too. A couple ham hocks.
Yeah.
So when we come back, we've got the last two matches, both championships. But there's kind of the next match kind of has a little serendipitous path.
Serendipitous. I like it.
We're using a lot of big words tonight: serendipitous, androgynous. All right, but before we do that. Let's hear from our good friends at WrestleChat.net, because
promotional consideration has been serendipitously paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Arjulo and the champ Jeff Beck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
Of course, WrestleChat.net is your home for everything pro wrestling, WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA. They have their own message board. Of course, a great podcast.
Never get enough of the Nitro theme. I'm going to start playing it as you talk. Go ahead.
They also have their, I just like listening to it.
Okay.
And the really cheesy open, which they would not change for, what, 3.5 years, even though all the characters all change.
I'm going to put a real test to Jason Greenhouse. Make us an open from Nitro with all the PTB Nation members on the buildings.
That would be great.
If you can do that, Scott will buy your WrestleMania 29 ticket.
Don't worry about the American Express card. I'll just say Bajor on it.
Yes.
Anyway, so, yeah, they have a great message board. They also, of course, have their podcast. And if you pan down to the bottom of the screen, go to the right, you will see the PTB Gnome, worn proudly by Mr. Jordan Duncan. And you can go onto our Podbean page and listen to all the wonderful podcasts
full archive.
We have. And a full archive, everything. So on those nights that we can't give you a show, unfortunately, because my PIC is up until 4 a.m. Watching Nitros and wiping spit up off his T-shirt. You can listen to the great archive we have of everything. And I want some comments from our PTB Nation. You and I were talking earlier about you were cataloging some music and stuff today. And I'm curious to see what the PTB Nation thinks of the evolution of the show from a technical perspective. Because we had a lot of our earlier shows were quite rough, like any show starts off rough. And I'm curious to see what you guys think about how the show has evolved from, you know, episode like 14 to now. Or 30 or 50 for that matter. So, but yeah, go right there. WrestleChat.net will take you there. It is your home for everything pro wrestling. You know the place, PIC, if you're home for pro wrestling? And that is the history of WWE.com.
Wowza!
The Place to Be podcast is a proud member of the History of WWE.com website. Mm-hmm. The History of WWE.com features thousands of complete cards and detailed results from throughout wrestling history from legendary promotions across the country, in addition to informative columns and reviews. It is also the official home of the Place to Be podcast and Scott and Justin's pay-per-view reviews. That's you and I. Visit us at thehistoryofwwe.com or on Facebook by searching for History of WWE or the Place to Be podcast, because for anything and everything wrestling and Mr. Freeze, Freeze of Oz, the history of WWE.com is always the place to be.
Hey, PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
Derek LaRue in the Morning Zoo here with your Jim Duggan WCW update. The Hacksaw. October 2nd, Ming and the Shock biting everyone in the water like Jaws defeated Jim Duggan and the Renegade. in Denver, Colorado, home of the Denvers. October 9th, 1995, Jim Duggan was backstage doing some stuff, and then October 16th in Albany, Monday Nitro. He lost to Ming, again, with a nerve hold. The nerve! Bazinga! On October 25th, Jim Duggan defeated Tim Burton, son of Neil Burton, cousin of Tim Burton. I'm Derek LaRue, and that is your Morning Zoo Jim Duggan update. Tell him about it, Grandma Meemaw. I love Jim Duggan. No, you don't. No one does. Not even that old man Scott, that old son of a bitch. Did I tell you he's old? Derek LaRue. I believe you were saying something.
Ladies and gentlemen, your words for today are androgynous, serendipitous, and bazinga.
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that what the kid says on that's what the kid says on Big Bang Theory, right?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay. What I was asking you was maybe he sells them. Did you ever actually have a Mr. Freeze freezer bar?
I'm sure I did.
I don't even think I've ever even seen them in stores. I don't know.
No, it's not a bar, it's a freezer pop.
That's what I'm saying.
Freeze the pops.
Freeze the pop. Yeah, I'm saying in the store.
You've never had a freezer pop?
I've seen a freezer pop, but I've never had Mr. Freeze's.
No?
Freezer pops. I don't think so. I don't really notice. But,
not to go all LaRue on you, but you might have been a little bit too old for a freezer pop.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway.
Not to pull LaRue and have type 1 diabetes, clogged arteries, and everything else.
Grandma. Was it Larry Johnson? What are your boys, Grandmama? All right.
No, Grandma Mima.
Grandma Mima. All right, enough of that. So we continue on.
Mm-hmm.
I have to bring the page back after doing the. Okay. We have our next title match.
Madness. Should we play the clip first or talk about it?
Why don't we, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Shawn Michaels is your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, but something happened to change all of that. And this is what happened.
Well, you can bet that this is not a pleasurable experience for Shawn Michaels. And the look on his face just about tells the whole story. You talk about one of the great competitors and a man who, if he lost the title, that's one thing. But having to give it up in this fashion.
The look on his face, I guess that's a face. It's got ears on it, but look at that. Just got his stitches out yesterday.
Both eyes were swollen rather shut. Michaels has made a remarkable recovery facially, but nonetheless, still suffering from the possibility of the post-concussion syndrome. And now walking over to hand the belt to Gorilla Monsoon. Having second thoughts, perhaps. This is a tough thing for a great competitor to do, to relinquish a championship in this manner. Very, very tough. You can feel the emotion in Shawn Michaels. I suppose is now officially the Intercontinental Champion.
That was easy.
Was heartbroken. And Shawn Michaels is just about heartbroken, I would suggest, yes. Michaels watching Dean Douglas put the Intercontinental Championship around his waist. And what a matchup that would have been. Michaels, one of the great competitors
Ladies
here in the World Wrestling Federation.
The new Intercontinental Champion, Dean Douglas.
And Michaels have to, having to endure this humility.
Okay. So, the match was scheduled to be Shawn Michaels defending against Dean Douglas here at this show. Mm-hmm. Earlier in the month, Shawn got drunk and drugged up, as he's wont to do during this time period.
That's for sure.
And was in a Syracuse bar with, I think it allegedly was 123 Kid and Davey Boy Smith.
Yes.
He went outside. He was on his own. The other guys were, I forget what the deal was. They were detained somehow. Mm-hmm. They were away from Shawn. Shawn was by himself. He started mouthing off to, and the number has changed depending on the story. It's either 5, 8, 3, 1 Marine. They never actually said officially how many Marines, I think. But it was most likely more than one. And they wanted to prove themselves. They wanted to beat up this fake wrestler. And he was mouthing off and showing off and everything else, preening. And they had enough, so they dragged him out of his car and beat the shit out of him. And his face was all swollen and swelled up and beaten down. And as a result, he had to come out, and they ended up switching things around. He forfeited the IC title to Dean Douglas here instead of defending against him. And then Dean celebrating. And I thought it was a good little heel moment, him ripping the belt from Shawn's hands and putting it on and celebrating right in front of him. And mm-hmm. I really wish they had left things alone at this point, because I think he could have had a nice little heel run as champion for a couple months. But instead, Gorilla says, that's it. You know, you think you're going to win here and walk away with the title by forfeit? No way. I'm the president of the people, so you're going to face Razor Ramon instead of Shawn Michaels. You're going to defend your title right here, right now. So a rematch from Your House 3 was set up right on the spot. But what is your take on Shawn? Because a lot of people say if he's healthy enough to go to the ring and forfeit, he was healthy enough to job it out to Douglas. He didn't have to forfeit. What did you think?
Well, it's the thing of the disparagement in that. If you're healthy enough to walk into a ring and hand a belt over, then you're healthy enough to actually get punched in the face and actually perform moves. That's like the stupidest thing I've ever heard. So anybody who says that, I think, is, as much as I was not a huge Shawn fan at this time, and he probably deserved to get his ass kicked, because apparently the story goes even further, I've read, that he was actually trying to pick up the Marines' girlfriends, or he was just being a pretty much a grade-A D-bag at the time, probably. But if you look at his face, that's not made up. I mean, he got beat up. And if they were looking out for his well-being, then I think it was a fine move. Because remember, this guy is the future of the company. He's a major cog in this machine. You're not going to risk his health over some throwaway secondary pay-per-view IC title match. That's if he's legitimate. I don't know what kind of rose-colored glasses, no pun to Gorilla, that Vince was wearing at the time, mm-hmm. whether he thought they were making it up or not. I can't say anything to that.
I guess it really just comes down to if you believe he was hurt or not, you know?
And yeah.
If you think he was hurt, or do you think he was hamming it up a little bit because he wanted to get out of jobbing the title, I don't know. And I don't know if he's even ever supposed to job the title here. I'm guessing he was supposed to, but I'm not positive. So, you know, I really think they should have just kept the belt on Douglas. One good thing did come out of this whole stuff, this whole angle and injury and beatdown, of course. Of course, the great Tell Me a Lie video.
Right.
Aired during this show when they played it up like he may have to retire due to these injuries. So the concussion and everything else they said he had, and they really would keep that going up until Survivor Series. I don't think he wrestles until then. And then, of course, we will talk about the fallout from there. But that is pretty much his story now over the next month. He's out selling these injuries, legitimate or not, and they would really play it up like they didn't know if he'd ever wrestle again.
Well, I They were so schmaltzy at that time. It was, I mean, that's just pathetic. It sounds like something. It sounds like that one of your favorite songs of all time. What is that? That Hulkamaniac in Heaven or whatever that ridiculous song is.
Huckster in Heaven.
Huckster in Heaven, whatever. Just so bad. I think they went a little overboard here in that aspect, but
yeah, I mean, I know what they were trying to do. They were just trying to build some extra sympathy for his eventual return, so try and draw a little money that way. But I mean, as we'll see, it actually did pay off quite a bit, quite well. But yeah, here it's a little overblown.
Yeah. My whole thing is, we talked over the last two vaults about. I like how I'm having my little soliloquy over this over this emotional, heart-wrenching bed, but they had this whole issue with, we talked about in the last review, the whole thing with the where did Jim Johnston get this choir from anyway?
I'm glad he found it, wherever it was.
My question is, or my point here is, they had this whole issue over the last 2 months with Dean Douglas, and he was, you know, the whole click backstage thing. Do you really think he was going to, if these two were going to wrestle, he was going to job to Dean Douglas? I seriously doubt it. I think Shawn was going to win the match. Awesome. I think Razor just was the recipient of.
Well, so, I mean, if you're saying that, then you think that everything was legitimate with Shawn.
I think it
was.
He had
no reason to bow out of the match if he was going to win.
No. I'm
pretty sure I've read that he was supposed to lose and that Razor was going to win it. I don't know if this was always the plan for him to win the same night. Probably not. But I was always under the impression that Douglas was supposed to win and then transition back to Ramon.
Well, let's put it this way.
Because I think they wanted the belt off Shawn because of what they had planned for him heading into 96.
Well, that's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
Was it going to be this early, though?
I think so. I'm pretty sure he was supposed to lose it here. Yeah, I think he was. I think they wanted to get the belt back on Ramon, and this was the best way to do it, to give Douglas the rub.
And then avoid him and Shawn and Razor having to wrestle again. Okay. I still think, though, that I'll go on record, because I may not have said this like 8 years ago, but I'll go on record as saying that I think that the injury was legit. Why would a bunch of people corroborate a fake fight in a bar?
No. I think the fight and the injury, I think that was true. I think he really did get hurt.
So people
are just saying he exaggerated the injury and played it up so he didn't have the job here. No one's ever questioned the attack.
Oh, okay. It was whether he really got beat up enough to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, did they sell things, and did he sell things more than he should have or needed to because he wanted to get out of the match? That's always been the attack on him in this spot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure that Vince was looking at doctors' reports, real ones, and talking. You know, is he okay? And what's the doctor going to make it up? What's Shawn going to say? Look, just tell him I'm in really bad shape. I mean, I don't know. Now that Shawn is his whole career, we know what he turned. I can't see him being that smart at the time to.
I think so. I don't know. I mean, well, we'll see it over the next couple of years, I guess.
But yeah, I don't know.
This is the height of his click powers, really.
Yeah. In any event. Oh, there you are. What are you hiding back there for? Ooh, Lark Voorhees. Hey, honey. Okay. So.
If you were any creepier, you'd be named Derek LaRue.
What? So I'm in the minority.
Yes.
that I thought the hottest girl on the show was Lark Voorhees. She's gorgeous. I'm sorry. I don't know. Anyway. So Dean Douglas, for this moment in time, is indeed the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion. However, as you said.
Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga.
I was, was it Keenan Ivory Wayans that had a talk show or something? I don't know. And there was a YouTube clip of her with some slinky dress on. I think it was like in, I don't know, 95 or something. Maybe Booker was there with him. Maybe I don't know if he was GI Pro at the time.
Me.
Okay. But as you said, Gorilla told Dean Douglas, you must get in the ring and you must defend your title. Mm-hmm. So, as we've said, Razor.
Oh, this annoys me so much. At the time, I remember hating it. Because I was a Douglas fan. And, you know, one point we forgot to mention, actually, when he made his debut in-ring on WWF, he was the first former ECW champion to be a member of the active roster and compete in a match.
That is quite true. Yes, absolutely.
But he, I liked the character, and I thought he was a decent heel at the time, and I was into him. And this little moment here when he rips the title out of Shawn's hands and is prancing around, rubbing it in his face, to me, it was the first kind of glimpse of the old franchise ECW from Shane Douglas from ECW. That was the first real glimpse of him just being a douche. He had been a jerk, but he had been a different kind of jerk. This is like, you kind of get that vibe when you watch that clip again. And I really thought he could have had a nice little heel run for at least a month or so, or a couple months, maybe until December. But I hated this. I hated this match. The match was awful. They had no chemistry and no rhythm. Not nearly as good. And that match wasn't even great, but their match at In Your House 3 was much better than this. I don't know if it came down to legitimate heat, if they just weren't working well in the ring together, if Douglas was just sandbagging him because he was pissed, or if it was just a bad night. But the match itself is just nothing. And the finish is even worse. Razor just kind of hits him with a back suplex and just kind of has a shoulder up, and Douglas is kind of near the ropes. I remember being a weird finish, and I hated this. I hated this whole thing. I don't know why Razor needed to win the belt back right here. I think Douglas could have beat him again, maybe, use some nefarious means and retain his title, and then Razor gets his win back later. I guess maybe the theory was, we're screwing the crowd out of seeing Sean, so we're going to give him something happy. That's usually the thinking in these kind of things. So maybe that's what it was, especially knowing what was still to come. So I'm guessing that was the main reason they shoehorned it in here.
Let me ask you something. Mm-hmm. Do you get the feeling, or did you get the feeling, as we're doing these reviews and talking about these matches, that there were so many, it seemed like there were so many good heel characters that really could have flourished had the product just been more organized and less click happy. I feel like there were so many good heels that were created in this calendar year.
Well, the major problem was that most of the top heel spots were taken up by Sid and Mabel during this time. So I think that's what really, really hurt.
But the other one, like, we have a great one here, Dean Douglas, who's been kind of, you know, his character's kind of been growing slowly and slowly. But we talked about your boy last month, Waylon Mercy. I feel like all these heel characters really could have grown and kind of helped the roster out as they were going through the fall and into the winter.
Well, they were almost filler. They, you know, we've made the comparison with the baseball team, the AAA guys and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, every baseball farm system has what they call organizational guys. Guys that fill spots in AA, AAA. They may get a spot start here and there in the majors, but they're never really going to amount to much. They're going to bounce around from minor league team to minor league team. And they're there to help you fill out your minor league rosters to help the real prospects move along. Mm-hmm. 96 would be loaded with real prospects, those guys that they were going to bring in to replenish their system.
Right.
And they were like an aging team that had phased out a lot of older guys, and they needed to fill this year with some organizational guys. And that's what these guys remind me of. Mercy, Douglas, Fatu, but all these guys to me were just wrestlers there to eat up some months until they got the legitimate group of talent that they wanted to use to move forward. That's how I look at it. And were some of them, you know, wasted and gone by the wayside when they could have, ended up being more to the promotion? Probably. I think Douglas is probably one of those guys. But it was just mismanaged a lot throughout 95. One of those years they had some talent, they just didn't know how to use it correctly. And guys like this just got wasted. And there'd be no room for them by the time 96 rolls around.
Right. I agree. Well, 96, we get a completely different, roster outlook and change in the atmosphere. So here, Dean Douglas, who really was a pretty bankable heel, you'd thought, but the click were just all over the place, and they were just it was a disaster. This pay-per-view to me, and the main event really shows it, seemed to have been a microcosm of what was wrong with the entire company that year. You had all these great characters who could have really been something, but unfortunately they really weren't given the time and they really weren't given the opportunity to really flourish, and they ended up just becoming, you know, fodder, and it's unfortunate.
And like I said, the match isn't even good. I mean,
yeah,
part of me wonders if they should have had the kid win the title here if you're going to have anything kind of be a shock. He comes off that loss, he's all pissed off, and then he somehow miraculously get to win here. And then you have maybe, rub it in Razor's face. But instead they go the other way, where this win would actually add fuel to that feud, or burgeoning feud, rather, where Kid was mad that Razor wasn't really upset about losing the tag titles because he won the IC title, and he felt that Razor was selfish and didn't care about him and their friendship. So that would play a role, but I don't know. Looking forward, of course, is – never mind. I screwed up. I was thinking it's Arisers in Philly. I forget it's in D.C.
Oh,
I was going to say maybe Douglas could have went in there as IC champ, but I remembered.
All right. Yeah. Wrong big five show. Yep. That was earlier in the year. So Razor Ramon for the one.
Is there another Razor?
Oh, did I say the Razor Ramon?
No, you were like Razor Ramon, like to clarify that.
I had a thought in my head. And I
Razor Ruddock.
Razor. God, I haven't heard that name in ages. Razor Ruddock.
I remember his big fight with Riddick Bowe. Razor and Riddick.
Razor and Riddick. Ruddock and Riddick.
That's when boxing was still hot. Remember that? My late uncle, he was always such a huge boxing fan. He always ordered like every major fight.
Really? And,
yeah, we'd always go over there. So I saw all the Tyson fights early. Like not the early ones, but his little post when he came back post Buster. But even all these Lennox Lewis and Razor Ruddock and Riddick Bowe, and especially when Pazienza fought, we used to get all those, him and Hector Macho Camacho. So they, it was weird. I was in this little span where I was actually kind of into boxing because of my uncle, and actually our friend Jim was into boxing as well. He used to watch him on his little black box, and we'd actually talk about it. A little known fact during our wrestling obsession, there was a little bit of boxing twinge mixed in.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah, I was a big Tyson guy. We used to get the shows. In the early 90s, the late 80s, even before the Tyson.
When I was out, when I hurt my back a few months ago and I was home for a few days, I think it was ESPN, the Verizon On Demand. I don't know, it was ESPN or ESPN, something. They had the Tyson's Greatest Knockouts.
Oh.
You ever watched that?
I have, yeah.
They air it sometimes. That's, if you're looking for something fun to kill like 25 minutes with, just go. You go back and him when he was like, in 1987, 1988, when he was just a monster coming up, just destroying guys.
Yeah, I have a Tyson story. I got to get in my head because I'll forget. We'll be very quick, and then we'll get to the main. You might actually care more about this story than about the main event. So, all right. I was in, ironically, I was in Sturbridge, where I'm going to be this weekend. I was with my parents. This was 1985, it was summer of 86. And we were in the hotel. We were just hanging out, and we were about to go out to dinner. And I told my mom, "Mom, let me wait a few minutes. I want to see Tyson." At the time, that night, he was fighting Marvis Frazier, who is the late, great Smokin' Joe Frazier's son. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be a big fight. It was on Y World of Sports. It was on ABC. And I told my dad, I said, "Just tell Mama, I just want to watch Tyson fight." And she's like, "We got to get the other reservation." I'm like, "Trust me, it's not going to take long." And sure enough, I'm like, "I'll be at the car in a minute." And they sat in the car, and literally Tyson knocked him out, and I think it was 26 seconds. And then I walked right out to the car, and we went out to eat. We didn't even miss a beat. It was awesome.
Do you remember a little trivia? Do you remember where Mike Tyson was billed from?
The Catskills.
Yes, very good.
Catskills in New York, yep. That's where he was. That's where he trained a lot. That was when Cus D'Amato and Jimmy Jacobs and all those guys. We can talk about Tyson forever. We'll probably get more into Tyson when we get closer to WrestleMania and to the Hall of Fame. But
We'll have J.A. D'Amato talk about it. Is he related to Cus D'Amato?
He'd be very lucky if he was. God rest his soul, Cus D'Amato. All right, time for the main event. And I apologize ahead of time. We can tell more Tyson stories if you like.
Just to put a bow on that, Razor's now the IC champion, and Douglas is pretty much now dead in the water. His heat's gone after that nonsense. I'm just stupid. I get why they did it. Like we said, they wanted to give the crowd something to cheer about after screwing the Modesty and Sean. But, the stink is heavy on that.
The funk.
It's got the stank, Rotella-level stank on it.
The reason I lost my train of thought when I did Ramon is because I was trying to think of how many title reigns this is for him now. Four?
Who? Razor?
Yeah.
Ramon?
The. Razor Q Ramon.
five. No, is it four or five? Four.
Let's see. 93. He won the Battle Royal. Mm-hmm. Kept it all till he lost to Diesel. Won it back. That's two. Kept it till he lost to Jarrett. That's three. Then they went back and forth, right? Four. This is fifth.
No, three would have been when he beat Jarrett for it back on that house show. So this is four.
Okay. So this is fourth championship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they only traded. I'm pretty sure they only traded it once. I'm pretty sure he beat Jarrett, and then Jarrett beat him back, and that was it.
Okay. All right, time for the main event. But before we do that, though, we actually have an announcer change. Because I...
Is this nonsense?
good. He's here.
Who?
Are those guys outside the door? Be patient, my friend. Are those guys outside the door, the two ball guys? All right, good. All right, we ready? Okay. You complained to me last week in the Vintage Vault.
I complained to you?
You complained to me that I was getting too hot, too heated.
I don't think I've ever said you're too hot.
Well, I am, but anyway. No. You said I was getting too angry, too volatile for this whole El Gigante situation. So, okay. I've decided to play fire with fire. Come on in. You're up.
I don't know what the hell's going on.
Good evening. My name is Monty Walsh, Esquire.
Now, hello, Mr. Walsh. How are you?
Mr. Rosado. I am the representative of one Mr. Scott Griscolo and the Place to Be podcast.
You sound like you're wearing a very tight shirt or a tie that's maybe a little too tight around your neck. Are you okay?
Excuse me, sir. I am from Asbury, New Jersey.
Okay.
Just north of England, Delaware.
Okay. And you're here because what?
I am here as a representative of you and your partner, the Place to Be podcast. Yes.
Oh, well, thank you.
Because
you're doing this work for free, pro bono.
Your partner cares about you and about this show.
He does.
And he is sick and tired of the emotional distress that has been given to him by one Francis Beja. So, I am here to announce a cease and desist order to you, Francis Q. Beja.
Hmm.
Or whatever your middle name is, for the emotional distress that you cause my client every week when you barge into the studio with your nonsense soliloquies.
Okay, so explain this in layman's terms. What's going to happen here?
What is going to happen is, you see those gentlemen outside the door?
Yes,
those
I do.
Two large, bald men.
Yes.
Their names are Bloom and Enos.
Okay.
Let's just say they're insurance.
Hmm.
You will no longer have anyone barging through the doors of your studio, firing off soliloquies to your partner.
Mr. Walsh, may I ask your nationality? You sound Finnish to me.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I am from Asbury, New Jersey.
Okay. I don't know if maybe your relatives are from Finland or something.
Just north of England.
You sound familiar to me, that's all.
Just north of England, Delaware.
Okay, you sound... That's all. All right, sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And according to this document that I have in my hand, you see it, Mr. Rosado, right there?
Yes, I do.
Okay. That you, Mr. Beja, will no longer have any contact with my client, Mr. Griscolo.
That's good news.
However, this cease and desist will be lifted if one Sir El Gigante comes into the studio alone and faces my client face to face to iron out whatever issues they feel they have.
Okay, well, we'll have to work on that. So as of now, you're telling me that Beja nor Gigante is allowed on this show.
Mr. Gigante is allowed in the studio alone.
Okay, but not until he comes out alone, he's not allowed on.
No. We will not have Mr. Beja come in here and continue to cause emotional distress to my client and your partner and this program.
Okay, sir. Well, we appreciate you stopping by. That's good news. So this show will be, it seems like it'll be Gigante-less because from what I've heard, he's not coming on and apologizing. And he's not going to talk it out with Scott. He's very upset. So it might be a while before we hear Gigante or Beja once again.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Rosado. I know that you are very proud of this program, but your partner is very upset, and he does not want to any longer deal with any of this nonsense.
Well, he does pay big money for this show, so I can understand why he'd be upset, and it's his prerogative. So, Mr. Walsh, thank you very much for coming by. Please be careful backing out of the driveway here when you leave the studios.
You look familiar.
Yes,
I haven't given you a ride somewhere.
Yes, you may have, sir. Yes.
May not, sir. Okay, all right. Well, thank you, Mr. Rosado. Goodbye.
Yeah. Say hi to your relatives in Finland for me.
I shall. What?
You back?
What do you think? All right.
I gotta ask you something.
Thank you. Are the guys still
out there? Where do you find a lawyer from Finland that likes DeBarge? That's what I don't understand.
First of all, I don't know where you came. He's not Finnish. He's from Asbury, New Jersey.
I've heard guys from Finland before.
He sounded
similar to them.
Said something about you giving him you gave you a ride once or something.
I don't know. It seemed a little
whack. You like the guys outside though? I like the
protection we have out there. Yes,
the guy with the real scraggly hair, the little guy he hasn't washed in a couple of weeks. That's Bloom.
Okay,
big guy. The other big dude there. That's Enos.
Okay, now let me ask you something though. Sure. Have you ever seen My Cousin Vinny?
Yes.
Okay, when you got the one son or the one felon,
yes,
wants Vinny to be his lawyer, and the other guy wants to go with the public defender early on.
Yeah,
that's where I'm at right now. Until you can convince me that this Walsh guy is legitimately good for us. And it has our backs and can get the job done. I might have to go with the public defender.
I'm telling you, this guy, everything is legit. You're not going to see, because you know what? You gave me a lot of crap last week about how I was too upset. I was yelling and screaming. And, you know, we're bringing a new member of Pre TB Nation into this world. And I don't think your daughter needs to see me screaming or seeing these large men in hairy suits causing problems.
All right.
You don't need her freaked out. Okay. I'm taking the high road here. If Bazier wants to try and harass me, I can play fire with, I can fight fire with fire.
I like when you play fire with fire instead.
Well, I can play fire with fire. Yeah, I learned that on the morning zoo one day. So until Giante,
I can't get him banned.
Okay, please. If he wants to come out here in this room alone and wonder why he's pissed at me, which I still don't understand, fine. But I'm not talking to that ambulance chaser ever again. The man is a charlatan and a con artist. I don't care who he's related to.
Will you stop?
I will, Gorilla. I apologize, Mr. President.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on.
But anyway,
point is made.
Point is made. We're done. The legalities are done. We can no longer discuss.
I don't think we're going to hear from Giante for a while. I don't think he's going to give in. So.
Well, I know you love him, buddy, but that's his problem, not mine.
All right, let's talk main event.
All right, the main event of this match, your World Wrestling Federation World Championship on the line, Big Daddy Cruel, who has handed us five consecutive subpar main events.
After two tremendous ones to start the year.
Exactly. And this now he takes on we were talking about great heels that have been built over the last few months in the company. Well, no heel right now is off the charts more than this guy.
And who are you to doubt El Dandy?
No. He's not. That's not who Diesel's facing. But you hear the voice of the, I guess, new number one contender for the World Wrestling Federation Championship, and that is the Hitman Bret Hart, who chased off the King, because God forbid that feud doesn't need to be reminded of us every day. And he now sits in the seat with JR and VKM. So was there any circumstance behind Bret being the number one contender, or they just said it?
I'll try and find it. I'm not positive. I can't remember, but I'll see if I can find it.
I was just curious. So he's the number one contender, and he will face – I don't know if the announcement was actually made or if they make it – I think they did.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they say it here.
Yeah, that Bret Hart faces the winner of this match next month at the Survivor Series.
And now this starts a trend over the next year from here through the end of 96-ish where they really started doing this, pimping the next month's show towards the end of this show, and I really love this concept.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And I think they needed it. I think they needed it. So Bret Hart, as I said – it was announced on this show right here by Vince that Bret is the number one contender and will face the winner of this match next month at the Survivor Series in our nation's capital. Davey Boy Smith, a red hot...
Ring Bullet's going to win whether he wants to or not.
So...
Remember when you tried to portray that kid as like some old drunk guy coming out of a bar?
Yeah. It sounds like it anyway.
Yes.
So the champion, Big Daddy Cruel, who was really just looked so weak and soft.
He's going to win the Royal
Rumble. The Ankunft des British Bulldog. Da sieht man, was draußen schon los ist. Wie viele Fans da die Ankunft der Superstars beobachten.
Because I'm bizarre.
That announcer kind of sounded like our attorney. I don't know. So... Big Daddy Cruel takes on the Bulldog. Now, you must have been pretty excited going in here because finally it seemed like Diesel had a legitimately good opponent here.
Yes.
A hot heel, good shape, a good worker in the ring. And you guys are watching it live. I'm sure you're with the rest of the entourage there in the double W squared. But alas, you were handed another 18 minutes.
Yeah. I definitely
your
did
unadulterated
have high...
garbage.
Yeah, and I definitely did have high hopes because Bulldog... You know, was a guy who could go in the ring, and we'll see that later this year that he could. And he had some heat behind him, and I was thinking, exactly, finally, here we go. A guy that can really go. And, you know, they had pretty good chemistry the month before, but I don't know. Something was just in the water on this night. The click all seemed out of sorts. So I don't know if there was something really serious turmoil going on backstage or what, but there was obviously issues backstage and issues with Vince McMahon and everything else, as we'll see after the match. We'll get to in a little bit, but... this really just a terrible, terrible. This might be one of the worst main events that they've ever put on.
Yeah,
this may be worse than the Mabel match because A, the expectations are higher, and B, this is almost 20 minutes.
Yeah,
and was, looked at to carry the show. And it's just a boring, boring match. And Diesel's title reign, this is officially, marked it as a disaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just a lot of chin locks, and it was slow, and both guys, big power guys, but didn't really show it off. Mm. I mean, it was just a mess. And I feel so bad for Bulldog, because it's just unfortunate that it came to this, because Diesel just seems so, we gave him the benefit of the doubt in the beginning, in January, put on a great match against the Hitman at the Rumble. Obviously, him and Sean tore the house down in Hartford at WrestleMania. And then right after that, it just went. And you and I were kind of right on over those few vaults. And we were talking about Diesel was supposed to be this big, but they were trying to portray him as the smaller underdog babyface. But the guy's, 6'9" right. Yeah, and freaking 3'10".
Yeah, he needed a character change badly. And just to backtrack just 1 minute. It was not known yet that Brett was going to be challenging Survivor Series. As a result of the little skirmish they get in here, they get into an argument and brawl. And then October 30th, Gorilla signed the match to Survivor Series. So,
yes.
So it was not known when he comes out here that he was going to be facing the winner of Survivor Series.
Oh, okay.
It was pretty heavily hinted, but
yeah. So the match is so bad. It's just so bad. And finally, even Vince couldn't handle it and take it anymore. Mm. So Urban Legend is, and I believe
I don't think
it's
been
corroborated. Yeah, I believe it's pretty much been corroborated.
I'm pretty sure there's been footage released of it.
Yeah. That after the pay-per-view went off the air, Vince threw down his headset and just got in Diesel's face and just pretty much said, "You are just an absolute worthless piece of shit."
I don't know if that part's true. I think it was clear that he was angry, and he knew the match and the show sucked, and he knew something needed to be done. I'm pretty sure that's been confirmed, that he did slam the headset down after the show and was very angry about the whole thing. And
yeah,
the post-match actually isn't bad when Brett gets involved and they end up fighting and Diesel pie faces him and all that stuff. So, I mean, that part of it was okay, but the match itself is just... Whenever I think of this match, I just picture Bulldog with this ridiculous leg lock just laying in the ring with Diesel. That's my only memory of this match.
I know. It's just so bad.
It's
so
18 bad. Minutes of garbage. And, yeah. Coming off of In Your House 3 that was pretty solid in the ring and pretty solid character-wise, and like I said, this show, you can see some of those changes coming in. You can kind of feel the change coming, but it doesn't evidence itself in the show because, honestly, outside of King of the Ring 95, this may be one of the worst pay-per-views they ever put on. And if it wasn't for King of the Ring, this would easily be the worst of the year.
It's pretty awful. Yeah, it's pretty unwatchably bad.
And there's honestly no good matches. The best match is the Guns versus Kid and Razor. And even that, we both have it at 2.5. I mean, outside of that, it was just, Razor and Douglas had some potential, but I don't know. I could never get into that match, and I don't like all the politics of this whole show. Is just bad. It's bad.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. We both give it. I actually was fairly nicer. I gave it a D. You actually gave it a D minus. You were slowly on the precipice of throwing up another F. But obviously, at least there were title matches and some things, debuts, and it wasn't a complete waste of time. But it was pretty.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the Federation, but the show itself as a standalone is just not good. And I don't know. I mean, I feel bad. This is the first pay-per-view in Canada since WrestleMania 6, and it's quite the differential nearly 6 years. But
yeah,
things would change. The next month of TV was actually pretty decent, and then we'll see our next pay-per-view really starts that whole wave. And we said it at our Survivor Series 94 review that it was 1 year of nonsense until we get to the rebirth, and we are, we've hit the nadir. We're raising back up starting with our next show.
Yes. So things look up, folks, and we appreciate PTB Nation. They're probably more excited about hearing their own feedback than they were you and I talking about these matches. So, all right, let's get right down to it then. PTB Nation, let's see what you have to say. Why don't you start?
Okay. Hang on a sec.
Because I know you like saying this guy's name. So,
Jay, King Kong, Spudley, Wimmett. What a fun pay-per-view. Diesel, Bulldog, King Mabel, Yoko, Razor pulling double duty, Jannetty, Goldust was another fun match, and okay. Interesting take.
Look at this. It's been a long time since this guy is actually...
I'll hand this one.
Yeah, you do it. Yeah,
Derrick LaRue's going to be the best pay-per-view of all time. time. Icing on the cake, which I know all about, was the verbal praise Vince gave Big Daddy Cool after the pay-per-view. But is it Big Daddy Cruel with that old bastard Scott? Did you know Scott was born in 1877? I bet you didn't. He's old.
He knows about icing on the cake. All right. Rob King. Mm. Kicking off the show.
She listens to these.
Kicking off the show, it's safe to say that Fatu didn't make a difference with this gimmick as much as he did later on with the Rikishi gimmick. Oh, sorry. About some other guy's gimmick. Ah, Rob King, we have to give you the guidelines too.
Mm-hmm.
The Kid Ramon feud seeds were planted quite nicely here. Goldust, I believe, made his in-ring debut on this show, and being a 10-year-old kid at that time, I was confused as all hell by his character. Yokozuna Mabel is a solid candidate for worst match of 1995. Wait till later on in the show. Dean Douglas gets his 15 minutes of fame, literally, as champion. The main event was forgettable. As I know, I saw this show, but can't remember the match. That's right, you didn't miss much. Not a good way to end a pay-per-view.
Mike Wilkinson, Kiss 107, LaRue, being ironic. I literally had not watched this pay-per-view since 1995. I must have watched the main event with rose-colored glasses. As I watched it again, I now see how horrible it is. It's amazing, 17 years later, how your thoughts can change. Not a great pay-per-view, and HBK is now 3-for-3 on not losing titles via pin. I love the click, but this is damn ridiculous. Diesel looked horrible. This time, he had a good opponent, and it can't do crap.
Okay. We're going to move on to there. Ashley Cruz.
Very good.
Fatu makes no difference in the opener, as the Blue Blood gets the victory. 1-2-3 Kid starts making that transition of the guy we all love to hate. Goldust makes his bizarre pay-per-view debut. Got to give Dustin credit. Most people wouldn't want to portray that gimmick. Mabel versus Yokozuna. Smell the work rate. Or was that the bacon grease from the pre-match? Simply terrible. Why couldn't the Marines who beat up HBK show up to beat the hell out of Yoko and Mabel for making us endure that? Razor gets a fourth IC title because it just had to go to another Click member, right? Bulldog gets a singles main event shot, which I'm glad he got. He was a good company guy who deserved a shot. Unfortunately, it's against Diesel. Thankfully, Vince will finally wake up and make some changes in the near future.
The man, the myth, the legend, Jason Greenhouse. This show brings to mind one thing, the debut of Goldust. In my mind, one of the best gimmicks in the history of the business. The vignettes leading up to this debut are awesome. This is a character that only got better over the years, but for this night, for a first-time impression, it was... And Ising, I'm guessing it means amazing. Side note to the nation, I highly recommend Dustin Rhodes' book, Shattered Dreams. The rest of the card was decent. Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Fatu had a solid opener. Yoko and the diabetic Grimace had a battle of the big fat sloppy pigs, which ended up being a big fat sloppy mess. Diesel and Davey Boy was okay. Helped set up the world title match for our next pay-per-view.
Diabetic Grimace. I guess it's too late for us to change his name. I think people have already jumped on it. Okay. Wade Ferrari. After a surprisingly good September pay-per-view, the WWF took a big step back with this stinker of a show. None of the matches on this show were any good. The best match was the opener, which was pretty average. The low point of the show for me was the whole Shawn Michaels IC title fiasco, as Shawn once again loses a title without having to job, this time due to injury. Poor Dean Douglas wins the title on a forfeit. Then if that isn't bad enough, he has to lose the belt 10 minutes later to Shawn's click buddy, Razor Ramon. It's no wonder the guy quit shortly after this show. The only significant thing to come out of this pay-per-view was the debut of the bizarre one, Goldust. I never saw any of his vignettes, so I was pretty freaked out by him when I saw him for the first time while watching this as a six-year-old. His debut here was okay, although I think they should have given him a quicker and more decisive win to put him over strong instead of having him wrestle a long, competitive match against Marty Jannetty.
Yes, good point. We didn't talk about that. I mean, Marty made him look good, but he didn't need to go that long. He really should have squashed him. You're right.
Yeah, I said that earlier, but 11 minutes was a bit much.
Yeah.
I guess they didn't want to totally squash Jannetty as he had just come back.
Someone else in there.
Yeah, like he was going to get some big push anyway. Yeah. But then if that's the case, they should have just had Goldust fight someone else. Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
Is that it?
Yep, okay. That's it.
I'm sorry, that was Wade saying that. I thought that was you.
Oh.
Jerry Nichols, sup, man? I remember thinking Davey Boy is going to win the belt going into this show. Shame it didn't happen. How awesome would Survivor Series have been if it was Bulldog Brett? The rest of the show wasn't too bad, with Shawn having to give up his title and Dean Douglas being jobbed out quickly being the most memorable moments for me. And yes, I did in fact turn on Scott that night heel.
Jared Incel. Turn on, well, I don't know why you wrote, but never mind. Jared Incel, this underwhelming In Your House marks the bitter end of one of the darkest periods in WWF history. Although the effects of that era would linger on for another year or so, it is at this show that Vince and his booking committee finally come to their senses and finally come to realization that everyone else knew a long time ago, that their WWF product stunk, plain and simple. It's hard to believe it took Vince 12 months, maybe even more, to finally admit how out of touch he was with what the fans wanted. But if there is one silver lining of this show, it's that things would finally change for the better once this pay-per-view went off the air. Looking back, In Your House, I think this means four,
yes,
is not all that bad. The opener, the tag title match, and Goldust debut were all served a purpose and were decent enough, but there's still no gem here like on other In Your House events. The IC title match was okay, but has been totally tainted by all the backstage crap Shawn Michaels was pulling at the time. Whoever booked Yokozuna vs. Mabel should have been fired. Gorilla Monsoon, I love you, but seriously, how the hell does booking this match best serve the fans' interests? One of his few blunders in office as the WWE president. Last but not least, we get to the main event. This was the straw that finally broke the camel's back. On paper, one would think that Diesel vs. Bulldog could put on a decent title bout. Unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be, as this dull match turned out far worse than I ever would have expected. Honestly, I don't know what's worse for the fans of Winnipeg. That they lost their NHL team at the end... Okay, so they were there one more year. At the end of the 95-96 season, or that they were subjected to this horrifically boring main event.
Here we go. Corey Ferreira. Coming off the really good In Your House 3, In Your House 4 is not to the same level and is the fucking shits. But this does mark the end of the really bad era of WWF. So first up, Hunter versus Fatu. And it's a decent match, nothing too special, but a fine way to open the show. Hunter gets the win. Smoking Guns, Billy and Bart take on Kid and Razor with the tag titles on the line. Smoking Guns go over in a good tag match. These four guys seem to do well when involved with tag titles, and it shows here. As this match is pretty good, nothing too special, but it's okay. Debut of Goldust. I'll give it to Dustin Runnels. He really did make this gimmick work during its original run. Here we see the return of Marty Jannetty, and the match is not good. Considering the two guys working the match, I figured it would be a lot better, but it wasn't that great. Okay, now is where the shit hits the fan. King Diabetes takes on Yoko, which amazingly is Yoko's first pay-per-view singles match of 1995. Good point. And well, it's fucking awful. I know they still want Diabetes to be a top guy, but they did realize he sucked in the ring. As for Yoko, he's not the Yoko of his WWF title run, and has lost a lot of his agility since then, and was not the worker he was in late 93 and 94. Anyway, Sean ends up vacating the title to Dean Douglas. You can tell Sean uses backstage power to get out of doing the clean job here. So right after Douglas is named IC champ, he takes on Razor and loses in 11 minutes. Razor who? Ramon?
Ramon.
So pretty weird booking here. The match is not good. Their match at In Your House 3 is a lot better. Okay, Bulldog challenged Diesel for the title, and while it continues the run of shitty Nash main events of 1995 that don't involve Brett or Sean, I like Bulldog as a worker, but him and Nash don't mix, and I figured Bulldog would have given Nash a good title match, but it didn't happen here. Unlike most Nash main events, they let these guys go nearly 20 minutes, so Nash got double the time he was getting the last few title defenses. Overall, the show was not good, and WWF is just at the bottom here, but thankfully, they begin to improve after the show. Also, for a show in Canada, where are Brett and Owen? Good point.
Mm.
Okay, time for Meltzer's ratings. Has Owen been on? When was the last time he was on pay-per-view?
Well, in an actual match?
Yeah, In Your House 2.
Right, yeah. He wasn't at SummerSlam, right? Nope. Yeah, In Your House 2 when he fought Allied Powers, right? Is that what it was?
Okay, time for Meltzer's ratings for the show. Just want to note his ratings. These are his and not mine. Hunter Helmsley versus Fatu, 2 stars. Smoking Guns versus Razor and the Kid, 2 3/4. Goldust versus Marty Jannetty, 1.5. Yoko versus Mabel, -2. And I never get the negative thing. How is it only -2? If you're negative, it's negative, right? I mean, this is a 0 or just negative stars. What's the difference between a -2 and a -3-star match? Razor versus Dean Douglas, 1 star. Bulldog versus Diesel, 1 star. So this might honestly be the worst rated pay-per-view of all time.
Yeah,
when you look at all people who've reviewed this, it never gets high ratings.
Yeah. Our own bandit, Steve Gross. HBK forfeiting the title paved way for the greatest video montage ever. Yeah, right. And the song, Tell Me a Lie, I Cried for Seconds.
Gersinio D'Amato, Mabel and Yoko in the first ever cholesterol challenge. Dean Douglas's icy title reign lasted as long as Bill Belichick's tenure as head coach of the Jets. After suffering through all the crappy gimmicks of the 90s, finally a grand slam. From the Shattered Dreams production to the glitter in the classic movie quotes, everyone remembers the name. LaRue.
I can't see him pulling off the platinum wig, though.
I can't see him pulling off anything.
Ah, yes, the one I'm looking most forward to. Safazio.
Safazio DeFazio.
Let's see if his dad's mentioned
his friend of Sato.
Yes. Ready?
Yes.
Oh, yes, In Your House 4. Pretty good top to bottom. The dark matches. Yeah, well, Brett didn't have to be in this dark match. Neither did Yoko and Owen. Okay, on to event itself. Okay, opening match as, oh, my dad's favorite asshole, Hunter Hearst Helmsley facing Fatu.
Hmm. You're right.
You know he loves this now.
Yes, go ahead.
All right. My dad's favorite wrestler, as Lord Alfred Hayes says it, anyhow, good match, not too shabby, 8:06. Then we get the smoking 8:06. Is that what time the match ended?
No, I think that's the length of the match.
The length of the match. Then we get the, well, it's only when he does. And then we get the smoking guns going against Razor 1-2-3 Kid, which doesn't end well. All in all, good match. And then we get a debut of a man named Gold, something Dust. Yeah, that's it. Facing Marty Jannetty. My dad was going, oh God, another asshole. Damn it, that's two so far. Anyways, not too bad. Yup. Next match, no Taker, just Candy Girl taking on Godzilla. Pass. 5 minutes of pure shit. Damn, I wish Taker was on this show. Then my dad is like, I'm going to grab chips. I'll be back. Go ahead, turn it up. Here we go. Oh, God. Then chips, I'll be back. Then the Razor Ramon Dean match happened. Now, this match I liked. Razor won the IC title back, and I was happy with that. Now, the main event. Okay, Diesel versus the British Bulldog. I love this match from start to finish. It was pretty good. I loved it. Okay. When Brett getting involved and then fighting Diesel was golden, and that, my friend, sets up Survivor Series. And now, the Safazio Lex Cougar update on KISS 102.5. He's on another radio station?
Named KISS.
On October 23rd, 1995, Lex Cougar and Ping defeated Harlem Heat, and Steve McMichael referred to WWF's In Your House as the outhouse.
That's right, he did, actually. Mongo called it that, the outhouse, one time.
Oh, God, that's funny.
King James Manda!
Manda!
I know this won't go down well with anyone, but I actually liked this In Your House better than number 3. But it doesn't mean I don't have any complaints about the event, because there are many. I noticed they suddenly started saying that Fatu is from San Francisco rather than Samoa because of his new look. Yet when Hunter Helmsley hits a DDT, he suddenly has his hard Samoan head on and feels no pain. Wonder why the pedigree was too much for him then. All in all, a decent opening match. The match between Smoking Guns and Razor Ramon and 1-2-3 Kid is strange, as both teams spend the whole match double-teaming like heels. Glad the Smoking Guns got the win, though, as I can't stand the 1-2-3 Kid. Marty Jannetty versus Goldust is way too long. This really should have been a squash match to get Goldust over as a real force. Unfortunately, he only looks a bit better than Jannetty, who is shit. Mabel versus Yokozuna. For Yokozuna is every fan's worst nightmare, but I bet Vince was creaming his pants during this one. The match consisted of two fat guys rolling out of the way of each other's moves. Then again, I suppose that's better than half an hour of nerve holds. Shawn Michaels once again drops the title due to problems he created. They could have easily put the IC title up at a tournament, but no, it had to find its way to his buddy Razor Ramon. The match between Razor and Dean Douglas isn't particularly enjoyable, as Ramon couldn't make it look any easier. It was very odd to see a face completely dominate their opponent to win the title. Fuck the click. And that's right, you know, we talked about how off that match was. I always forget that part, too, that Douglas got, like, no offense in for 11 minutes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Diesel starts to show some heel tendencies by pushing Brett in the face during the match. Could have been a decent match, but there's just too many attacks on Diesel's legs for it to flow and be interesting, including the worst sharpshooter of all time performed by Bulldog. Diesel performed 3 moves in total before the DQ due to Brett's interference, which brings an end to this very disappointing title match. Overall, I think it's a fairly decent card. Most matches are to the point and serve their purpose. Survivor Series is on its way, and I never thought I would look forward to 1996 quite so much. Thank you, King Manda.
Yes. Ryan Schmuck. In Your House 4, in my opinion, was the worst In Your House event. Undertaker gets replaced by Yokozuna, the Polynesian Godzilla, to face off against Candy Girl King Kong Mabel in a match where the fans didn't seem to care. They should have had Undertaker face both in a handicap match. Dean finally gets the goal, but ends up losing it to another Click member. I'm sure he was hearing the chants of ECW in his head. Hunter Hearst Helmsley beats Mad Fatu. Make a difference. The premiere of Goldust beating Marty Jannetty was an okay match. I had no clue at that time that Goldust was Dustin Rhodes. Guns over Razor and Kid, with the breakup looming between Razor and Kid. Bulldog Diesel, with Brett commentating, proved that Brett was Diesel's next challenger. Overall, not a good event, in my opinion.
Karen Polland.
The Hot Scott.
This show's pretty terrible. Just one spoonful of shit after another. Hunter Helmsley and Fatu had a decent match, and the tag title match was pretty good. But after that, everything goes downhill. Goldust debut is meh. Considering he was facing Marty Jannetty, you'd think it would be better at least. Yoko Mabel, you can just tell, would be shit from looking at the names involved. The IC title match reeks of politics the whole way through, and if the Click's plan was to ensure Douglas's credibility was destroyed, they did a fine job of doing it. Who loses to a back suplex nowadays, anyway? It wasn't even a side-o suplex, like David Hart Smith was using his finisher. Okay. The main event, I think he means Salto. Is that a Salto suplex? The main event was dreadful and thankfully opened up Vince's eyes to the fact that Diesel simply could not be champion any longer. Once again, Brett's left off the pay-per-view, and as a result, the overall quality of the show once again went down. Not a very good pay-per-view, but at least the WWF begins to rise from the ashes with the next pay-per-view. I would like to say in regards to SummerSlam, I found it hilarious how Diesel had to sell for Mo of all people. He had to sell like Mo shots for killing machines.
True.
So there's your feedback. No Michael McDonald this week. Kind of sad.
Yeah, must be busy.
Yes. So that's it. We're nearing the end of 95. It's coming soon.
Oh, boy. I'm kind of glad we kind of got past that bump in the road. Woo!
Yeah, we've actually we've hit the end of the bad part of 95. Like, you know, we can say we're closing on the end of 95, but I think we've actually, this is it. You know, the end of 95 is more like a prequel of 96 more than part of 95 in my eyes, but
right.
We will get there when we get there. So with that said, hope you enjoyed this little bonus episode of the Place to Be podcast. We're able to squeeze in for you as I sit here impatiently waiting for my daughter to arrive. We're hoping we'd have like breaking news and my wife would go into labor while we're recording or something crazy, but did not happen. So with that said, we do not know when we will be back.
If we will be back, though.
Yes, someday. If my daughter is not born, the plan right now is to do headlines on Tuesday night. So we will keep you guys in the loop there. And then I'm not sure when we'll get to Survivor Series, but hopefully soon. And we also have that big interview planned. It is official. We'll break that news shortly once we have a time and date and we start coming to you guys with questions. So with that said, this is it. Hope you enjoyed this show. Visit us on the message board at bigelow34.probards.com. Please take part in the hottie tournament. It's really cruising along. Please don't bitch about seedings. I'm so tired of it. We get it. Beauty and hotness is subjective. Not everyone agrees. Just vote for who you like better. If you like Lark Voorhees, just fucking vote for her. I'm tired of defending the seedings. Okay?
She's in it?
No. It is what it is. So just please participate and have a good time. Visit us on Facebook, Place to Be Podcast, on Twitter, Place Number 2B Podcast, Graham Cawthon's page, thehistoryofwwe.com. Until then, until next time, for my PIC, Scotty C, I am Justin Rosero, and I think there's only one song we can go out with tonight. Very fitting for the end of Big Daddy Cruel's title reign.
Something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life. It's something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life.